Good afternoon. This is the Albion Roar in association with oldfootballshirts.com. My name's Richie and you're listening to Radio Reverb on 97.2 FM or via the internet at radioreverb.com. Well, it's FA Cup third round weekend as Albion travel to Torquay for a tricky away tie against the League Two strugglers. Confidence should be high after a 5-2 victory away at Wickham, with four of those goals coming to Glenn Murray. Murray became the first Seagulls player since Brian Wade in 1991 to score four in a game, and the first since the late 60s to do it away from home. Yesterday also saw the transfer window open, and there is much speculation about whom Gus Poyet will bring in to strengthen his squad. Okay, joining me in the studio this week, we've got Raw regulars Alan and Adie, and today we have a very special guest. He made 95 appearances for the Albion as a player between 1976 to 79, scoring one goal. He then became Albion manager on October the 1st, 1983, becoming a favourite with many Albion fans until he left the position on April the 30th, 1986. It's a big hello to Chris Catlin.
Good morning, how are you? Good afternoon, how are you?
Thanks for coming
nice,
on, Chris.
Nice to be here. Happy New Year to everybody as well.
Happy New Year to you too, Chris.
Okay, if you've got anything you would like to ask Chris, email us, thealbionroar@radioreverb.com, or you can post on the thread on North Stand Chat that we have.
Also on Facebook as well.
And also on Facebook. So, yeah, any question? We've got plenty of questions already, but if you've got a question that hasn't already been asked, then please get in touch with us. Okay, we're just going to talk briefly before we talk to Chris about the last two games over the Christmas period. And I want to ask the panel, 4 points out of a possible six, are we happy with that or are we disappointed?
We'd be happy with six, obviously. But
because, I mean, it's an away victory, but a yes. Draw at home.
I mean, the Orient game on Boxing Day, I've never seen two sides both trying so hard not to lose in my life. It was just...
So it was boring, in other words.
It was completely dire. Boring.
It was boring.
So we won't talk about that very much.
Well, there wasn't a great deal to talk about, apart from maybe Croft sending off, where the first yellow card was ludicrous, and the second one was silly in as much as he knew he'd already been booked and yet, you know, sort of still proceeded to drag the guy back. So, you know, you got to think a little bit. And he is the captain. He's just been made captain for the previous sort of half dozen games, whatever it is. You got to think a bit.
Yes, indeed. But four goals for Glenn Murray away at Wickham. And we were 2-1 down at half-time, so maybe it was a magnificent team talk.
25-inch screamers, the lot of them.
Okay, well, the overhead kick was quite special.
Actually, yeah, I did forget about that.
The little mazy jink in the box to score as well.
No, he's
firm headers.
He's back on fire and doing what, frankly, that he should have been doing for the previous 2 years.
Okay.
Or 18 months or whatever it is. It was 2 years now, isn't it? That's fantastic stuff, and
long may it continue.
Well, it's a case of, you know, he will play one game, have half a decent, you know, play really well, and then the next game just it doesn't fire for him. We just want to hope that, you know, there's a case of almost saving face that we want to get through this game today, because Torquay are there, they're beatable. You know, it should be on paper. Yes, I know we don't play on paper, we play on grass. You know, it should be on paper a fairly easy win, but, you know, this is the Albion we're talking about.
Would you put Cross back in today?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, he's the captain now, isn't he?
Well, he's the captain. Cross and Dicker are the best probably centre midfield pairing we've had for a long time. Arguably since the fella on my left's put his midfield together.
Exactly. I was just going to ask Chris, do you keep up with all things Albion at the moment?
Oh, ever since I left the club, I always watch through the press and television how they're doing and what's happening at the club with great interest, obviously. If you play, coach, and manage the club, it's part of your life and always will be.
Would you like to have Glenn Murray in your side as a manager?
The three up front in this standard of football, the three up front, Foster, Dickinson and Murray, there's enough goals there to get this club promoted. There's absolutely no question about that. All Gus Poyet's got to do is sort his midfielder and the back four. If they do that, there's goals in that. They don't need to go out in the January winners and sign a goal scorer. In my opinion, they've got enough goals with M3 and this standard of football to gain promotion out of this league. It's just sorting the putting square pegs in square holes and round pegs in round holes and sorting that out. And once that's done, and he's got a lot of experience with Swindon and Leeds and Spurs, and he should be, you know, the ability to do that and get Albion moving in the right direction. There's not many good teams in that league they're playing in.
So he's the right man for the job. In
I think he's a good signing. I think he's very enthusiastic. This is a big opportunity at a club like Brighton. It is a good opportunity for him, and all round it seems the right decision.
Okay, excellent. Okay, well, let's talk about Chris Catlin then.
Mm.
And shall we start from...
Was that the right decision?
Let's start all the way back in 1964. when probably your hairstyle was probably similar to how it is now.
A Mohican.
You signed at Huddersfield as a junior. Mm. Tell us about your days at Huddersfield.
Oh, they were fantastic days. I went there and under two marvellous coaches, and Ian Greaves, who became manager of Bolton Wanderers, and a very enthusiastic coach called Henry Coburn, who played for Manchester United in England many times. And they were fantastic coaches and mentors to me about attitude to professional football and life in general. And there was only not only me, there was people like Frank Worthington and Trevor Cherry and other people in that little group of players we had.
Can I just interrupt there and actually point out to the younger viewer, to the like, viewers? Thank you. Yeah, I'm really glad
radio,
no one can see us. No.
You should know that we're radio by now.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I know, yeah.
Well, Al has got a great face for radio. That's
every single time.
And physique.
Is that both Frank Worthington and Trevor Cherry both went on to play for England? I mean, Frank Worthington was it more clubs than Seve Ballesteros? And yeah. Trevor Cherry went on to Leeds and he played a few times for England. So just gives you an idea as to the company that Chris was keeping at Huddersfield.
The calibre, yeah. And they had a reputation for developing fullbacks. And Derek Parkin went to Wolves. They'd have Bob McNabb, who went to Arsenal. I know a lot of you younger people won't understand these players, but they're quality players, Derek Parkin and Bob McNabb. And I was lucky enough to get the opportunity to sign for Coventry. I could have gone in to see Tommy Docherty at Chelsea. They bid the same fee. But the only reason I signed for Coventry City really is because I went down there and they were playing my heroes the next day in Manchester United. And I went down there, all the cameras were, and I thought, this is not for me. There must be something special going on here. And they was playing, they just come back from Gornik in Poland in a European Cup game. And I said to Noel Campbell, the manager at the time, I said, if I sign for you today, will I be playing tomorrow? He said, I've just smashed the British record for you. Of course you'll be playing.
Do you know how much that is?
Yeah, £80,000, which is a lot of money in them days. You're talking about millions today, £80,000 in them days. And I made my debut the very next day against Manchester United and got lucky enough to so-called Man of the Match award. I had a good game against George Best. And
you had to mark George Best?
I did, yes.
Well, that was easy, a good easy game.
Yeah, a good starter, yeah. But I was very, very confident. And the only lack of confidence was, would I get my boots? Because my boots was in the Huddersfield boot room. And my father, I had to send him across the Pennines to get my boots in a paper bag.
When you
no, it's a true story. He arrived at Ifield Road, well, the Hotel Learfrick in Coventry, with a paper bag with my boots in, because that was the only drawback I'm making my debut.
Had they been cleaned?
There wasn't medium rare.
So when you realised you'd be marking George Best, did you decide to give him a kick at the beginning of the game to let him know you were there?
Not really. I was a very, very confident young man. I thought, it's funny, people like you go into radio studios, you feel confident straight away, you get in front of the mic. When I walk into football, I'm nervous before the game, but as soon as I was on the pitch, it was like my home territory, and I was very confident I'd do okay. And subsequently, I didn't do as well as the reports made out I did, but nevertheless, I didn't let myself down.
I mean, when we did some research into you, and like you're still very, very highly revered at Coventry. Do you still have many contacts there?
Yeah, I was very privileged the last season when they played Chelsea in the Cup. It's the biggest game Coventry had in 20 years, and they invited me to be back as one of three guests of honour for the game, with Downs, who used to play at the left back here at Norwich, and Bennett, the right winger, who played in the Cup team, defeated
Dave
Tottenham.
Bennett.
Yeah, Dave Bennett. Mm. So three of us were guests on the day, and when he left the club 30-odd years and they asked you back to be a special guest, it does leave that you must have made a small impression, or a reasonable impression, on the club you left.
Now, this actually brings us on to another point. I think it's a question that came in from Brovian on North Stand Chat. He said, what was your best ever season? And you don't have to mention 79. Now, I think that you're going to say another season, your best ever season.
Best season as a professional footballer?
Mm.
My last 10 games to keep Coventry in the Premiership in them days. Derek Robbins, the chairman, said, we don't want to go down. We've spent all this money. Mm. And that will take you to Barbados if you stay up here. You know, and the last 10 games, when I went there at first, I played reasonably well.
Which season are we talking about here?
We're talking about 68 to 69, I believe.
Right. Because Coventry had only just come up to the First Division for the first time ever, wasn't it?
The first time in their history, yeah.
Yeah. So it was a town and a club that was still buzzing, but probably under no illusions that You were competing with the big boys.
It was in the the lack of experience there at the club at the time. But they signed a fella called Ernie Hunt from Everton and me from Huddersfield Town. And we stabilised the whole situation. And Ernie was a big character, big personality in the dressing room. It's not only about ability to win football games. You don't have 11 George Best to win games. You know, it's a combination. You need your foot soldiers, bits of this and bits of Bob, to get a team spirit within that room. And that's very important. So we added a bit of character in the dressing room and a bit of confidence. And the other players then responded.
As your old mucker Andy Rawlings would say, you need some violin players and you need some hod carriers.
You do. And that's why that was my game, the hod carrier.
Well, you kind of done too badly because, you know, straight after, Coventry finished third in the old First Division and got into the UEFA Cup.
I don't think it was third. I think it was sixth, I think.
Right.
But nevertheless, we did qualify for Europe, and I was part of that, and it was terrific. We beat Plovdiv in Bulgaria, but we come unstuck in Munich against Bayern Munich, and a team that had great players like Sepp Maier, the goalkeeper, Franz Beckenbauer, everybody's heard of him, Gerd Müller. And they had a tremendous team, and we was knocked out the competition.
So who did you have to mark?
It wasn't none of them two. It was a little right winger who was very slippery. But I forget his name now, but he was a very, very good player. All talented players, and we unfortunately went out. But nevertheless, to get sixth in the Premiership as it is today for a club like Coventry, it was tremendous. It was a good side, though.
Did you have Jimmy Hill at the club at the time as well?
No, it was Noel Campbell at the time. The only time that Coventry's got into Europe was Noel Campbell. Subsequently, Noel got the sacked, and Joe Mercer and Gordon Milne came.
The thing is, I only associate those with Man City, so this was obviously before Man City then.
Joe?
Yeah.
No, Joe came after he left Malcolm Allison at Manchester City.
Right.
And he came to Coventry. Yeah. Gordon Milne was a young manager. Yeah. He hadn't started shaving then. And so they brought old Joe along for his experience.
Because, again, for younger listeners, Joe Mercer ended up for a short time being caretaker manager of England. So it gives you, again, an idea of the calibre that you had around. So you had 8 years in the First Division at Coventry.
Right.
And then Alan Mullery decided to sign you into the bottom of the Third Division.
Alan Murray did what?
He signed you to the bottom of the Third Division.
He did, yeah. Alan had his own train of thoughts and where he wanted to do things, and you can't knock it because it's a wonderful time, very successful. But he was very lucky in Eric Peter Taylor's team with full of characters and good signings. But nevertheless, you need to keep the show on the road, and Alan certainly did that.
Uh-huh. So how did it come about was it a case that Alan was tenacious in signing you, or was it the fact that you'd kind of had your best days at Coventry? How did it come about?
No, Alan didn't sign me. Peter Taylor signed me.
Oh, Peter. Oh, right, okay.
Peter Taylor signed me. He signed me and a fella called Graham Cross from Leicester in the summer. He told us he was going to do this, do that with the Albion, and it was all good news, all singing and dancing. And then all of a sudden, he had a place in Calamalore in the Mallorca, Peter, with Brian Clough. And he met Cloughy over there. And then he came back here and he said he wasn't feeling well. He was maybe a semi-heart attack. Load of nonsense. And he went back with Cloughy. In came Mr. Murray.
So how much were you signed for the Albion?
They give me away. They couldn't.
Oh, right.
For me, length of service at Coventry, they decided that they wouldn't put a fee on me in order so I could have a testimonial here.
Oh, okay. So
remember,
how old
we didn't get the money in those days.
So how old were we at the time?
I think I was 29, and I came down and met Mr. Bamba and Peter Taylor. I was very impressed by Bamba. And I had a good hour talk with him in his room and Harry Bloom about what they wanted to do with this football club. They was going to buy the Graham Stadium, which they almost did, and Corals came in the back door at the last second and robbed them of that, because that was where the new stadium was going to be and not where it's going today.
So even that, it was rumbling on in those days.
Oh, no question. There's the ghost to Goldstone, but Mike Bamber had bought Corals. And they came in at the back door, Corals, at last seconds.
Oh, right.
And that's where the new stadium was going to be.
Right.
Did you have any reservations of dropping down a couple of leagues?
No, I didn't. Because I could see the potential. They can get 20,000 for a game of marbles here in them days. Do you know, it was a fantastic support. Maybe Debbie against Mansfield, I think it was. And there was 35,000 there. Mansfield Town, 35,000. This was a fantastic potential football club to rise through the divisions. And Mike Bamber's train of thought and Ari Bloom's as well, what could happen here came to fruition.
Excellent. Alan?
Oh, sorry, Mike, me again.
All
right.
Over to you.
So, yeah, so you rose through the divisions with the club. Mm. Were you part of that famous 7-0 Walsall game?
No, I wasn't part of that. That's why they went so well that night. No. I was injured and sat in the stand, but it was a remarkable game. I remembered, you know, I can remember the game, the Ward and Mellor, the movement of those two, and that night was exceptional. He was an exceptional player, Peter Ward, though.
Mm, it certainly was. So you were part of the, like I say, the promotion winning sides. I mean, cause I suppose probably with the Albion, that would have been in 77 and 79 your first promotions, weren't they?
Yes, I never had a promotion before. I got to the semi-final of the League Cup with Huddersfield Town, mm-hmm. got into Europe with Coventry, mm-hmm. came down here and got involved in two promotions with Brighton of Albion Football Club. So
you didn't do too badly.
No, I was very, very pleased with that. It's no use entering a competition unless you want to. You're going to win it. It's no use coming. I've always had this adage. It's no use coming well done, and I don't do well done's.
Yeah. So you let's fast forward into the end of the 79 season. Mm. Promotion came a knocking again. You went to Newcastle. Mm. So did 10,000 others.
Right.
All on the same train.
Right. Brilliant.
Yep. I've heard the stories from Wardy. I've heard the stories from Andy Rollings. Yeah. Come on, let's hear your version of that train home. Did everyone keep their clothes on?
It was a mad journey on. It was unbelievable. I remember on the Saturday morning before the game, me doing a warm-up in the hotel grounds. I didn't feel right for Brighton. And I got a tracksuit bottom and I was doing what we call doggy sprints in the ground. Some of the lads saw me. They thought, he's gone. Cat's gone. Yeah. His head's gone. But his hand, I didn't feel right. So I did that. But
so when you say you didn't feel right, mentally are you talking about?
No, I felt slow. I'd had a breakfast and I thought, I kept deep breathing. I thought, I don't feel right for this. You know, it's no use going through the motions. If you don't feel right, do something about it.
Well, especially if the motions are going through you.
So I got my tracksuit bottom on and went in the hotel grounds and did some sprints to liven myself up. It was a good idea. The train coming back was fantastic atmosphere, and I think the actual supporters and the players on the same train personifies what Brighton was all about in them days. You know, you felt like if you got injured on the pitch, one on the chicken run on the far side of the north stand would jump on and take your place. We're all one.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no Billy Big Times. There's no this. Mm-hmm. We're all a unit.
All in it together.
Yeah. The tea lady, Fred the paper man, who saw the Argus going round the ground. It was all a unit.
Yeah.
No Billy Big. If somebody's jumped out of line, like Wardy or anyone, it was slapped around the head from me for starters. You know, so he knew.
Form an orderly queue as to who was next.
They knew.
I suppose at that time you were probably one of the senior pros at the time.
I was shaving club. Then, yeah.
Yeah, I was. Yes, I was. And they dropped.
Yes.
So it was a fantastic time, and then nada. That was your last league game for the Albion. I was looking up the records. I couldn't believe it. I could have sworn you played in the first division for us.
No. I said to Mike Bamber at the time, and I said, "When if you get back to the first division, Premiership is today." Mm-hmm. I said, "I'm not going to be good enough. I had an Achilles tendon injury before I arrived here, and I didn't want to let them down through the divisions, and I don't think I did." Mm-hmm. But when I got into that level of football, I decided that I've got to go into another walk of business because it's no use being an also ran, playing the odd game here, and it wasn't. No, I did what I promised. I would try to help to do, and I did it, and I get my hands up, and I wasn't good. Well,
that's a very noble thing to do. Because I mean, in this day and age, people will just. I mean, you have your journeyman who tell up at club after club after club. Mm. But I mean, I suppose if you know in yourself that you're not going to be right. I mean, did you consider dropping down
again? I didn't want to play. I played at the highest levels with Coventry in the Premiership for 8 or 9 years, and I had a wonderful time with Brighton of Albion Promotions, and I didn't wish to go down the divisions. I thought, get onto something, you're not as good as you was once was, Chris, and move on to something else.
So you retired?
I retired.
So and how old were you when you retired?
About 30, I think, 31. Well, only a young man.
That's really...
I knew this tendon injury. I just lost a yard of pace, and I wasn't as quick as I was.
He's fibbing. He was 34.
No, I wasn't.
It says here. Were you born in 46?
I was.
Right, so we're on to 1979.
Yeah.
You do the maths.
Is it 34?
33, 34.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
So you retired 2 years before.
So you retired at 30, but you carried on playing for him.
That was in the back garden.
You were like dreaming of all these.
No, I didn't realise as old as that.
So you're part of the, so you're part of the playing. You're still a part of the playing squad that season, because I was looking it up and you played one game, which was, I think, a League Cup.
Yeah, it's Arsenal. Yeah,
yeah, and we lost
3-4-0.
4-0, yeah. You, and you were playing.
I played that
Okay,
game,
I think the writing was on the wall then.
It was.
Well, no, I think you were against someone like Ricks or O'Leary.
No, it wasn't that. I think they signed John Gregory from, and John came in, and John was a very, very good player. Mm. And I thought that season I kept the youngsters going in the reserves and did what I had to do and be as professional as I could.
Sure.
And that was it.
So was there any time lapse in between you effectively retiring and joining the coaching staff?
No.
You jumped on straight.
Wasn't on the radar. Right. Never came on the radar.
Right. So we're fast forward a couple of years. We've got to Wembley. And then I was never particularly a fan, irrespective of the fact he got to the cup final. I was never a big fan of Jimmy Mealy. He'd taken us down, I think, with too much bravado. And then you stepped in. So how did all that come about? I know you're part of the coaching staff anyway, but how did you getting the job come about?
Well, I had a phone call from Mike Bamber and asked me to go along and had a chat about the way the club was progressing and what direction it was going in. Mm-hmm. And he asked me to come back as coach to the club. And I declined at first. Mm-hmm. I thought I didn't feel right. But then he asked, he insisted, it kept driving me mad.
Oh, right.
And I came back as coach. So I came back as coach for a while, and it's always difficult when a team's been to a cup final and also been relegated. Mm. When you used to go into Manchester United and Spurs, and then you suddenly go into Carlisle and places like that.
Cambridge.
Sometimes players cannot, when the diet's changed, if you like, they don't like the thick pea soup after the the good stuff.
Yes.
So, and then Jimmy went.
Yes.
And Mr. Bamber asked me to come manager, and I declined again and again. I didn't think it was right.
Well, why didn't you think it was right? I mean, you took over eventually, but why didn't you think
it was... I'll tell you why I didn't think it was right. I thought I was young and I needed a little bit more experience, but the board thought I was right to do the job.
Did you have aspirations of going into management at that point, even though you declined?
At that time, yes, after coaching, I thought, yes, and I felt comfortable in it. Mm. It was a difficult scenario at Brighton, though. We had a lot of experienced players on reasonable wages, and it was a very, very difficult scenario when I got... I didn't realise that the club, even then, had a tricky financial situation, and I had to sell some of our better-known players and replace them with not so well-known players.
Yeah, there was rumours at the time that even when Jimmy was there, that you were actually picking the team.
No, I didn't. I wouldn't do a thing like that. What me and Jimmy Mealy did was to sit in the room and discuss, and at the end of the day, the manager's decision is final. Mm. I could only, in the four walls of the manager's office, I said that, but I wouldn't certainly interfere what Jimmy Mealy was doing.
So was your first game in charge the game against Charlton?
No, it was Sheffield Wednesday.
I remember this one, because I remember this very well, because Jimmy Mealy made a complete fool of himself, came onto the north stand, and a few fans who'd seen obviously Mealy take us to the cup final stuck him on his shoulders, and you know, it was an absolute disgrace, disgusting, Mealy being sacked, blah blah blah, who's Chris Catlin, who, you know, we don't want, but and it was I found it so embarrassing, and I was only 13 at the time, and I still found, or 14, just turned 14 at the time.
Was he on your shoulders?
He was.
Did you nick his shoes?
Should have done. I think someone did.
The white shoes.
I think someone did nick his shoes, actually. But I remember that. And it was because obviously it was straight after. It was only a few months after we'd beaten Sheffield Wednesday in the cup semi final.
Mm, right.
So there was this kind of, you know, compare and contrast. And I know that we lost that day. And it was just something that Melia shouldn't have done. You know, to go out with dignity and grace, and you know, and I think he made a fool of himself personally. But
that was an after the game. That, you know, it was a very difficult first game, but then we was next to the bottom of the league, and we've all seen what's happened to Leeds and Coventry City and other teams that get in these difficulties, and then I had to sit back and make sure this didn't happen to Brighton of Albion, and we did make sure of that.
Sure.
We came back down, come back strong, back into it. and we ended up in an healthy position in that table. Healthy position, yes, from the position we started, but still not good enough.
Yeah, and I think it was about sixth of finish in the end, something like that. But yes, I think a lot of people were expecting straight away, and no, it wasn't great. I know you had to do things like sell Fozzy, you know, because I mean that was front page news in the Argus. You know,
was that forced upon you then, the sale of Steve Foster?
Yes, it was. We needed money at the time. The bank needed money, and I took Steve Foster up to Villa Park. Went personally with him, and we had a bit of dinner the night before. I can remember it as though it's yesterday. And I said, "You've got to go, Fozzy." And he said, "Okay." And the following morning, after at breakfast, he came down, and he had second thoughts. He didn't want to go. And I said, "You've got to go."
You've been told to go.
No, he's got to go. You know, yeah. I said, "You've got to go, Steve. I would like to keep you, but you've got to go." And so eventually, he was injured at the time. He had a bad thigh injury. And I was telling Doug Ellis what a marvellous player he was and what he do to Aston Villa, trying to sell him even more.
Yeah.
And he never made his debut for 9 weeks. And right. I saw Ellis in a boardroom at Derby County, and he come chasing me across his boardroom.
He sold me a crock.
And I'll tell you a lovely story as well about Doug. The television, Midlands TV, was there and everything. And Ellis was there, you know, with Steve Foster, the Whitehead band, and all this, carrying all what goes with it. And I said, "Oh, by the way," I says, "where's the cheque, Mr. Ellis?" "He says, the cheque." I says, "The cheque, you've signed now. I'd like the cheque, please." "Do things like that." He says, "The football club." I said, "Well, I'm here now. You might as well give me the cheque." And he says, "Oh, just wait a minute." And he went and wrote a cheque. I got him cheque. So I come down the M6 with a cheque. I come back down here with, and give Mr. Bamba the money. So Ellis said, "This is the way we do it." And of course, he never made his debut for 9 weeks. It was a bit naughty, but we needed the money. Well, yes, answer to your question. I made that very long-winded. Answer to your question, yes. Certain players had to go because they were put on these. I mean, the same thing's happening at Portsmouth today. I mean, Mr. Redknapp's gone on through on his horse through to Tottenham, and the wages that I presume are being paid by some of these Portsmouth players. Everybody says, "Why are they in trouble?" And it's probably I'm at a distance here, but it's probably because the players are getting far too much wages. But if he hadn't have offered those ludicrous wages, they wouldn't have come. But Harry wouldn't have been a good manager and got into the cup final, and it's a round robin situation. I'm not saying Harry's not a good manager, an outstanding record, but this is the way you either have a feeling for a club and you use diligence, or you think, "Oh, sod this," and you go from one club to another.
Okay, just out of curiosity, how much did you sell Steve Foster for?
£250,000.
Okay, that was quite a lot of money back in those days, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. He's a good player, though.
And this was in the days before the transfer window, of course. So I mean, it was like
sell any time. But then, see, the players that you did bring in, it kind of does read like a who's who of a decent Albion Parthenon. I mean, we had you brought Danny Wilson in. What a great midfielder. Now, this is when we're talking about the great sort of central midfielders. Danny Wilson, probably, if I was to pick the players that I've seen as the best central midfielders, I'd have Wilson and Horton together. I don't know how you feel about that, Chris, but
Danny Wilson was a great signing. He played, he signed for Brian Clough from Chesterfield, and he played him outside right on the odd occasion he played for Nottingham Forest, and I knew he couldn't even go past my missus. Mind you, not many can.
Yeah, but you must
have... but if you put him in the centre midfield,
just pull
making runs in the box, and legs like a tree trunk. But the thing is, he wanted £250,000 for him, Cluffy. So I kept going up to the Forest ground and seeing Brian, and he used to sit me down on the floor and asked me if he wanted a drink,
because I'll join you later.
I had a cup of coffee, and he'd get on about his uncle used to have a sweet factory in Middlesbrough. And so he knew I got a shop on the front selling sweets and what have you, so he rap over about it. I said, "Listen, Brian," I said, "I need to sign Danny Wilson." He said, "I've told you, £250,000. So this dragged on two or three times. Then Ron Greenwood, who was at Brighton at the time, giving Barleywater Player of the Month award, which didn't help my case because Cluffy knew about this. So I phoned Cluffy on a Sunday at his house, and his son answered the phone, not Nigel. He's got another son, answered the phone. Right. So who is it? I said, "Tell him it's Chris Catlin in Brighton." So Cluffy comes on the phone. He says, "What do you want?" He said, "Wait a minute." He said, "Do you know what day it is?" I said, "Yeah, it's Sunday." He says, "You're not going to believe this. It's Sunday in Brighton as well, Brian." And he says, "What do you want?" He said, I want to buy Danny Wilson, but I've no money." And he said, "I've £40,000 on my thing tomorrow morning, or..." I won't repeat this on the radio.
Yeah.
So that's what he said to me. I thought, 40 grand for Wilson. So I went and see Mr. Bamber. I said, we've got to get 40 grand from somewhere tomorrow. I said, you'll make a big profit on this lad. He's one hell of a player, and he will be. He'll get goals for us as well. So we managed to get the 40,000, and it was slapped on Cluffy's table before he went to Callum-Mallore the following morning,
right,
again.
Yeah.
And we signed Danny Wilson. So it was excellent signing, yeah.
I think it was fabulous signing.
But you also signed my favourite Albion player of all time, as well, at that time, which was Steve Penny.
Little Penny, yes. He flattered to deceive at times. He should have done... I've seen him recently in Spain, actually. But he flattered to deceive at times. He should be better than he was. He had great ability, but he never really did it with the ability he got. He should have been better than he was, but he was an excellent player, tricky player, and a player that I think the supporters like to come come and see. You know, a little winger getting crosses in, and he was lively. He had the right attitude. He was good.
And I think probably arguably the best signing you made, I think, was probably Dean Saunders. Mm. Who, as legend goes, you made sure that he kept the train ticket so he could claim back on expenses.
He did. No, I signed him, watched the reserve game, and I thought he was totally outstanding. I couldn't believe it. And I managed to...
He was at Swansea at the time,
He was at Swansea Reserves.
Yeah.
And I phoned John Bond up, who was the manager of Swansea, and he said he wanted £10,000 for him. And I couldn't get £10,000. I hadn't got £10,000. Mm. And so I thought, oh, that's the end of that. At the end of the season, Dean Saunders got a free transfer because mm-hmm. Swansea had financial problems, so he let him go. And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't get him down here quick enough.
Mm.
And I told him that if he signed for me, he will play for Wales, he'll score goals, listen to what I'm saying, and this, that and the other. And I got him to sign, and he came in. He says, I won't make how much signing on fee. I says, well, I'll pay your train ticket, you know, because you've done nothing. And he produced his chitty for eight. I remember it was £18 in Swansea, and we gave him £18, and off he went.
It must be really pleasing for you to have developed a player like Dean Saunders and Danny Wilson to see how well they did after they've left. Well, especially Dean Saunders after he left Brighton. You know, he went to Liverpool, obviously.
He did, at Villa and Turkey, and he's still going now as manager of Wrexham. Yes, it was. Every manager makes good signings and bad signings. And you can go right through the thought. I mean, you look at Ferguson now at Manchester United. I mean, Veron at 28 million. He signed an Italian goalkeeper for about 8 million that went back to Italy after 2 minutes. Berbatov, I don't know what the heck he's all about at the moment, you know, the contribution. And you go to even the Arsenal manager, he signed Francis Jeffers for 8 million and then giving him a free. So, and Benitez, well, Benitez at arm's length, the list of what he's signed.
That will please me greatly, yeah.
So,
can you just repeat that?
Okay, Chris, then who was your worst signing?
Come on, name the turkeys.
The worst signing, I would think, I needed a centre forward, had no money, and Mick Ferguson had scored. Hang on a minute, he scored. Hang on a minute, I shouldn't be saying this.
Let me tell you.
I spoke to various people, Bobby Gould and a few more, and the season before he joined the Albion, he scored 9 goals in 13 games at the highest level for Coventry. Think about that, 9 in 13. Mm. Lack mobility, he come down, he's the greatest disappointment of my life. Mm. Greatest disappointment. And no matter what, I thumped him, did anything with him, you couldn't get him to move. And he just lost his appetite for life and the game. I don't think he got personal problems. Off the field, I do not know, but he just never played like the Mick Ferguson who I knew he wasn't going to chase all over the pitch. He was getting a long in the tooth for that. But what I do, I've got players who can get crosses and he can get in the box. And we had Terry Connor and Dean Saunders and people like that who would score goals off Ferguson's heading ability. Mm. But you couldn't get the Daily Mirror under his feet.
So what do you do with a player like that? If you can't get through to him, do you just leave him in the reserves to sort of sort himself out?
No, you can't do that. He's on wages and you've got to, you know, either put your arm around him, try to solve his problems and talk to him. But he was long in the tooth and he was a great disappointment to me. I hate it when a player... If a player can't play, I can accept that. But if a player has ability and doesn't do it, that really gets to me, and I'm not happy at all with that.
I think the one that sewed it up for me was the cup quarter final against Southampton. Yeah. We lost 2-0.
2-0. Glenn Crockham scored twice.
God, I hated him.
I know.
But I do remember. I do remember. It well. I mean, it's when I sort of did the reaction when he said Mick Ferguson. I just remember that was a game where I thought, oh, come on. You know, I think the ball, a couple of times, the ball was laid on the plate for him, and it would have been easier to score than to miss. And he was...
You could see it in his face, that dank look on his face, not an healthy look on his face. And he just... But I had nobody else to play.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's the only player I got. Points. And I couldn't buy anybody because I had no money. So you're trapped. It's a little bit different. I think today with Poyet and the new chairman, this lad will have some money to spend. This lad is... I'm going to fast forward a little bit. I think this club now is absolutely going to go from strength to strength.
Well, I think it's about time he did.
No. I honestly believe that with the money he's pumped in and the lack of debt now, that and thinking about the other teams in them divisions, how they're struggling financially and no stadium and nothing. What a great opportunity for Brighton after all these years.
Now, Chris, it is FA Cup weekend this weekend. So, as a manager, what would you say your favourite FA Cup moment would be?
My favourite FA Cup was...
Well, as a manager or a player?
Watching as a young boy, Blackpool and Bolton, my dad sat out. That was... What a game that. I really...
The 53 Cup final was...
Oh, it's fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Throughout the years, there have been many, I think Ronnie Radford's goal for Hereford. It was... Match of the day and Michael Parkinson after I don't think I went out for 10 years on a Saturday night.
Black and white minstrel show. And
never went out. I used to love it. I couldn't wait. The FA Cup was so much. We used to go to a special hotel in Huddersfield when Huddersfield were playing. We played Chelsea and they just the actual atmosphere of the Cup. There's nothing like the Cup. It was fantastic. Absolutely. And you used to go around the radio on a Monday and listen for the draw. Oh, my father was there and everything.
These austere gentlemen with the velvet bag. None of this glitz and glamour nowadays.
Absolutely fantastic.
Now, what about what about as a manager?
As a manager, when we drew Liverpool in the Cup, and I'd seen Liverpool play, and I just thought we could peg Neil and Kennedy back with Neil Smalley and Stephen Penny. I thought if we get at them and get running at them and knock them backwards.
This is the home game, the 1-2-0.
Yeah, the home game on a Sunday at the Goldstone,
And it was on TV as well, wasn't it?
It was on TV.
I was there. I was there.
It was great. And sometimes it's nice when you're a manager when you get your tactics right for once. Instead of sitting back and try to get them on the break with Jerry Ryan and Stephen Connor, I thought I'm going to go at this lot.
Terry Connor.
We're going to go at this. So we went at them and caused them all kinds of problems. Anson and Lawrenson and Grobler.
As soon as got substituted after about the first 10 minutes, I think.
Grealish whacked him.
I just quite said right, it's either. Was that part of your tactics?
No, it's either him or you. You know, you can't. When you play against somebody, you can't have a good day.
Yeah.
It was either Tony Grealish or Graham Souness.
Right.
And I said this to Grealish, and Grealish responded...
In the first 5 minutes,
appropriately.
Maiming
appropriately,
him.
So
that must be you could get away with a lot more in those days.
Could, but so did Graham Souness. There was nobody...
He was a filthy player.
Him and Johnny Giles.
I just want to point out Chris's achievements here as a manager. I mean, there was obviously, notwithstanding the Liverpool game, there was... obviously, he took us to the FA Cup quarter-final. We had the season of when we conceded the fewest ever goals... which I think was 85, we conceded 34 goals. That was Chris's achievement. He signed players like Saunders and Penny and Wilson, and he brought in, albeit for a short time, Frank Worthington and Dennis Mortimer.
Hans Cray.
And Hans Cray.
I was going to ask you about
him. Did you teach him to be a nutter?
No, he was a nutter when he arrived.
Because he was banned in Holland, wasn't he?
Mike Bamber said to me, he says, we've got to go and watch this player in Holland playing for FC Breda called Anza Cray. I said, what's he called again? He says, Anza Cray. I says, is he a guy or a lass? So I went and seen him. I says, why is he banned in Holland? He says, he's not the referee. Not the referee. He'd actually hit the referee. I says, hang on a minute. I says, we can't have an Ed Banger coming at the Goldstone. And so I went and watched him. I was very, very impressed by his enthusiasm. Limited, technically wise at times, but wonderful enthusiasm. And I met him after the game, and the way he conducted himself and his enthusiasm, the wanting to come to Brighton, that sold it to me. We got him over here and just let him off the leash. And off he
went. So when you first watched him, was he doing that jumping up and down in the goal mouth then, or was that you doing that?
That was me. I said to him before a game. I said, this goalkeeper's bad on crosses. I said, jump up and down in front of him. And I didn't realise that. I didn't mean jump 6 foot.
Well, it was right in front of the goalie, wasn't
it? But, oh, yeah, but his enthusiasm was unbelievable. Jumping out. And all the North stands started jumping,
that's
didn't
it,
they?
Yep, we did.
And everybody started jumping.
And I remember one ref telling him to stop doing it.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
It's within the law.
Yeah, of
you can't it, stop him
of
to
course
do
he couldn't. Of course he couldn't. But, you know, that's refs for you. But, yeah, no, it's...
no, it was great, Hans. Both on and off the field, he brought something to the party.
I don't remember him maiming too many referees, though, thankfully.
Mm. Pardon?
I don't remember him maiming too many referees.
Not he. No, we controlled him. We settled him down a bit and told him, you know, what's expected of him here. But without taking that enthusiasm away.
He's certainly one of those players that has gone down in the annals of history with us.
Absolutely, it's like,
no, he's a great lad. Great lad.
And then it went... all wrong.
Mm.
You were sacked.
Yeah.
Are you prepared to tell us why?
If I knew, I would. I just think we had three or four bad results on the spin. It was getting towards the end of the season. I think it was about eighth in the table at the time. The one game left against Hull. I think it was seventh or eighth in the table. You got that on there? Was it eighth? Seventh or eighth?
I don't
know.
Anyhow,
and so consequently, we hadn't got promoted to the Premiership again. And it was disappointing. I'd had a couple of altercations with a couple of the directors there who had their own train of thought on where the club was going. And they're a world authority on world football, these two directors.
I can imagine most directors are.
And so, being a northern man, if I've got something to say, I say it. Mm-hmm. It was a clash. I went into the boardroom. They asked me to go in the boardroom and they decide to dismiss me. So, which they're entitled to do, and that was that.
Mm-hmm. And you think that in thinking back, that's the only thing you can actually think of. I mean, bearing in mind, looking at the things there, it looks like we finished ninth that season. So obviously you were expected on the pitch to be higher, and you probably expected yourself to be higher.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily reasons why directors who are sort of, you know, once upon a time were austere, aldermanic type figures with wingtip moustaches, and then sort of... they became, for a long time, and probably still are in some cases, egotists' playthings.
Mm.
I recall Len Shackleton, his biography, his autobiography. There was a chapter that said what the average chairman knows about football, and it was a blank page.
No. But these two directors could write a book on football,
right?
In their eyes.
Oh, right. Yes. For you, it would be a sort of an A4 pamphlet folded in half.
I mean, it's in many, many ways, it's like being an aeroplane. There's a bit of turbulence, and they run up the front and just get the pilot and say, "Come on, I can let me sort this out in the cockpit."
Mm-hmm.
You don't do that. You sit there, you tie your seatbelt on, and the captain, he knows what he's doing. But they won. One of the directors is still there today.
Right. So 23 and a half years on, that's the best you can think of as to why you were sacked, was because you had a difference of opinion with two directors.
No. I think they felt that, I think it was seventh in the table, not ninth. I think it finished ninth because they lost at Hull. But I think that they thought that wasn't good enough to come seventh in the championship.
Yeah.
Where today, subsequently the years have gone by, sometimes I get the feeling that they've got a civic reception to come seventh.
Mm. Well, certainly at the moment,
No. It's not too late this season yet.
Yes.
You know, they're on about, will we go down, we'll keep at the bottom. Nonsense. You only need a run of results with 3 points for a win, and they can be halfway back. And then, I mean, they completely outplayed Southampton the other day there, and Southampton are looking to get promotion this season. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why... if they sort that back four out and stop conceding some stupid goals, that Brighton can't be up come the end of the season, or even this season.
Mm, there or thereabouts.
Oh, yeah.
So what you've been doing in the intervening 23 years?
Oh, Christ.
Just the short version.
No,
obviously, you're legendary for your rock shop down on the seafront.
I threw myself into those shops and worked extraordinary long hours in there to try, and I was determined and take my mind off probably the football scenario. And I that's what I did, and I started to develop a little bit of property down there, and that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
I threw myself into it. As Shanks said, if you're going to sweep the roads, sweep them and be the best sweeper you can. And I thought, if I'm going in a shop, I'd try and make it the best shop and do what I can, and I always do that.
So this is the first bit of TV or radio you've done since then. So I mean, are you kind of, you know, ever felt that you've been sort of not welcome into the Albion fold, or are you going to go and watch the Albion again? Are you going to Falmer?
It just the way it ended it with the Albion, the dismissal, and then there was a lot of angst afterwards, and then suddenly there was a court case, which was ridiculous. I mean, it was childish, it was kindergarten, and I thought, if this is the way professional people conduct themselves, I don't want to be part of this anymore, and I come away from it. It's a shame, really, because football's in my blood, but there you go.
Okay, this is the Albion Roar in association with oldfootballshirts.com. My name's Richie. You're listening to Radio Reverb on 97.2 FM or via the internet at radioreverb.com. Joining me in this studio, we have regulars Alan and Chris Catlin. Now, I think we should take some questions. There's a question from Uncle C from North Stand Chat, and he says, what, if anything, would have tempted you back into football management?
Only probably two clubs. Coventry City and Brighton of Albion.
So you would come back and be manager of Brighton Hove Albion?
No, it's gone. It's too late now. I'm too old. I'm shaving.
You've dropped.
Gone past my sell-by date. But obviously I'd have liked to come back and finish and put this club on the back in the Premiership. But it's gone its course, and football's like it's not only Brighton, other things. And perhaps Coventry City, if I could have helped them, because that had a lot of feeling for them.
So do you miss not being in football?
You have a time clock in football. Any ex-professional footballer at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, you don't feel the same. And I would like that. For all the years, when it would come to 3 o'clock, I felt uneasy and wrong. It's not about being in the army or anything like that, that you miss the banter and the comradeship. Of course you miss it. Of course I still miss it. And, you know, I'm walking around Sainsbury's with the missus. It's not ideal, is it?
No. Do you still get recognised around Brighton?
It's just my nose, I think. They said, is that a Dyson on the front there?
I can see another career in the after-dinner circuit. Any more questions, Richie?
I'm just having a look here. What was the highlight of your playing career? This is asked by Brovian.
Well, I did ask that earlier.
Over the best season.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you did ask the question. I've just asked it of Chris, and he's just kind of... I'm going to tell people, he's rolled his eyes. Are you going to Falmer?
Oh, okay.
Am I going to Falmer?
Yeah.
If I'm invited to go to Falmer, I will go to Falmer. I'll probably go to Falmer. Depends who I'm invited by.
Yeah,
likes of you, I'd come.
Yeah,
you lads, I do respond to. I'm a real fan, really.
Uh-huh.
I am a fan. I'm not one.
Who was your boyhood team, by the way? I haven't got to the bottom of that.
Manchester United.
It was right.
Manchester United. Yeah.
I've got a question here from Goldstone Rapper, and he asked, did Chris play in the game where Ernie Hunt did his donkey free kick?
Yes.
Was that rehearsed much in training?
Yeah, we rehearsed it in training, and the reserve scored two goals prior to Ernie scoring that day with it. And why it's disallowed, I do not know. I do know the law is two feet.
Yeah.
But it was innovative, and Noel Campbell was give credit to him, and... In an era now where you don't seem to get many inspirational free kicks, nobody comes up with anything different, and it's disappointing, really. For us to come up with that and score a goal and to be disallowed is ridiculous, really. Anything that makes the game more exciting for the fans or interesting, it should be applauded, really.
Now, it seems that...
I was going to say that the show here is sponsored by something called oldfootballshirts.com, and there is a very famous old Coventry shirt, which was chocolate brown.
Did you wear that?
Did you wear it?
No, I didn't know.
You know the one we're talking about?
Dreadful. In my day, it was like Milan. It was green and black. I know Milan's not green, but it was green and black stripes we played in, but not the brown. The brown's ridiculous.
It was horrible.
Worst ever.
Now, you're still obviously very passionate about football.
I am.
In general. So you follow the Albion and you follow Manchester United. What's your opinion of football these days? You know, I mean, obviously there's a lot of money in the Premiership that doesn't get filtered down to the lower leagues.
I think football is improved tremendously, the pace of the game. I think the players now are getting the just rewards, but there's a lot of mercenaries in there who are prepared to sit on the bench and earn tremendous amounts of money. I think the Premier League are being very selfish, and it's all in-house, and they're only looking after their own situation, and it doesn't filter down, like you say. Mm. I think the Albion have got to get the skates on, because sooner or later that Premiership will break up, and there'll be a tier below the likes of Norwich, Coventry, Ipswich and people like that, which Brighton's got to get into rather quickly. I think possibly the leagues below that will inevitably become part-time eventually. And it's important they get the stadia get the right manager, get the players, and get in there. And they certainly can do that. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all. It'd surprise a lot of people, because a lot of people have lost a little bit of respect for the Albion, where what's gone on over the years. And I think it'll make a lot of people sit up and take note of them again. And it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if they achieve that.
Now, obviously, back when you were playing for the Albion, you were getting crowds of 25,000, 30,000. Mm. Obviously, with Dean, it's not the best stadium in the world. We all know that. We're only getting 5,000. But there is a potential there for the Albion to be as well supported as they were back in your days.
Not quite as well supported, because different things that people can go and do with a spare time now. But nevertheless, it's got the potential to get very, very good crowds here. You've got to get them off the seats. Make the manager's got to make it interesting. The players have got a bit of a personality. We don't want to be run-of-the-mill. Hmm. You know, ordinary, run-of-the-mill. This is a special foot. A little Chelsea, if you like, by the sea. And that's what we've got to produce at Falmer. Interesting players, where everybody wants to read the Argus, everybody wants to see what's happening next. Not dull.
So it's like when you sign Frank Worthington, a player like that, bring people, put bums on seats, basically, and
make
and get people
it, make
excited.
It into, tell them we're going to do this and do that. And I think Poyet's the lad to do it. I think he can make it interesting. He'll have a lot of foreign contacts, obviously, by his nationality. And if he gets a little bit of money to spend, although the Albion has spent possibly more than anybody else in that league already.
Mm. What do you make of all the foreign players in the English game now?
Some of them have brought a lot to the table. Other ones are a waste of time. Complete waste of time. Mercenaries, which are drinking the game, along with agents who are pathetic. These agents are something again.
I think the problem is there's a lot of the foreign players come on the cheap, and they're a cheaper option than buying British English players, aren't they? Mm. And also a lot of foreign players coming from lower leagues that just, you know, like you say, are being sold by agents without even teams going to look at them. I remember that Argentinian player we had.
Chirienzo.
Yeah, I believe, and I could be wrong, that I'm not even sure Mark McGee went to see him play.
No. No, it's they buy them off videos and everything like this. You've got to go to your backside and get around and watch these players, not off videos. But a lot of them bring something to the table. Yeah. They're lively. They're a bit sexier names than the ones we've got. Albert from Burgess Hill. And, you know, it's a little bit of a sex. But nevertheless, there's also Rans who collect large amounts of money, who are draining it. And that should filter. There's got to be a system where it's filtered down to leagues below, and it's not.
It's not happening, is it?
No. I think the Arsenals, the Manchester Uniteds and Chelseas and the directors and the leadership and the lad who's running the Premier League have got it wrong. They're being bullied into giving more and more, and what that's going to do is take the competitiveness out of football. And once you lose the competitiveness of it, you're in trouble.
Yeah. When you've got teams in the top division who are aspiring to finish fifth, you know there's something horribly wrong, or aspiring not to go down. Mm. You know, because I mean, first, certainly as a fan, I remember the first thing was not to humiliate ourselves, not to embarrass ourselves, and to actually stay up. Yes, we did in the end, but that, you know, from there you could kick on. Mm. But that's because it was Brighton's first time, and we were minnows, and in comparative terms, we were minnows. But now, when you've got teams who are established in that division, Bolton and Fulham and Wigan, who have been there for 3, 4, 5 years each, and they're still aspiring not to go down.
I beg to differ a little bit there. I don't totally agree with that. I think that Premiership is really, really interesting. Who's going to come fourth and who's not going to go down? I think it's very spicy. My point of view is that the money should be going down to the Championship and leagues below to give them strength and opportunity to get in. To get in. And if the Boltons and Wigan's and Burnley's fall out, they've got a little bit of strength and substance when they come up to have a better chance of surviving in that league. But the league itself, I think the Premiership, is so blooming interesting.
I'd like to see it go back to a straight four league format. Forget the Premier League and just have it straight as it used to be.
Well, it is basically.
It's not because the money's staying in the Premiership, and it's not.
No,
for
that's true.
It's all down to television, isn't it? At the end of the day,
well, it's actually down to just the marketing. I mean, at the end of the day, the Premiership is the first division. I mean, it's Division One, but it's down to Premiership and who's running it. Apart from that, we're in League One. Man. Sorry, no, it's the third division. Where's the one bit come from? You know.
Right, okay, that is about it for today. You have been listening to the Albion Raw in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Huge thanks to Chris Catlin for coming in.
It's a pleasure.
Will you come back?
Yeah, we'd love to have you back.
Certainly,
at some point.
Yes, I will.
Fantastic. Excellent.
Not 22 years, though.
Maybe 22 weeks. Okay, thanks for listening, and tune in again next week. All right, bye for now.
on a morning from a Bogart movie, in a country where they turn back time. You go strolling through the crowd like Pete DeLorean contemplating a crime. She comes out of the sun in a silk dress, running like a watercolor in the rain. Don't bother asking for explanation, she'll just tell you that she came in the year of the cat. Time for questions as she locks up your arm in hers, and you follow till your sense of which direction completely disappears. By the blue tile walls near the market stalls, there's a hidden door she leads you to. These days she says, I feel my life just like a river running through the year of the cat. While she looks at you so coolly, and her eyes shine like the moon in the sea, she comes in incense and patchouli. So you take her to find what's waiting inside, the year of the cat. But for now you're gonna stay in the year of the cat.